We're going to be ending it with Pamela speaking to us today, and I just can't tell you enough of the wonderful gift that she has been in my life. And when I found out that she hadn't ever spoken at a convention, and I just realized, are you outgoing president? Are you president? Incoming. Okay. What an appropriate that she kind of wraps us all up today. Yeah? Isn't it fabulous? Hasn't all the speakers been incredible? The lunch panel yesterday, Roberta, James last night. Just an incredible weekend, and it was such an honor to be able to pick all these people. My co-chair did a fabulous job, and it's so great to be here. But now, without further ado, Pamela, 19 years over, back-to-back abstinence. She works at World Service. I can't say enough wonderful things. You're going to so enjoy hearing her, and no pressure at all. Peace, right? Peace. Anyways, Pamela, here you go. Let's hear her.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Pamela. I'm a compulsive eater, and I'm grateful to be in recovery. I always say that rather than that I'm a grateful compulsive eater, because, you know, when I first came into these rooms, I would hear people say I'm a grateful compulsive eater, and I would roll my eyes, and I would hear people say something else, and I would roll my eyes. I mean, my eyes are just constantly going like this in the meeting, you know. And so I still don't say I'm a grateful compulsive eater, but I do say I'm a compulsive eater grateful to be in recovery, because there are so many compulsive eaters in the world who are not in recovery. So my gratitude is that I found these rooms, and knowing a new freedom. We were talking a little bit earlier. I said, you know, I don't want to speak too long, and so give me my times, and then I said, of course, who knows? You're probably going to have to get me off here with a hook when the time comes, and it made me think of. I remember a guy at one of our meetings was a newcomer, and after 30 days he led the meeting, and he said, I'm not going to be able to talk for 15 minutes. That's way too long. And at the end of 15 minutes, he was at the fifth grade. And he said, I can come back next week and finish. So that's kind of who we are. We love to tell our stories. And I love the theme of this year's convention, Knowing a New Freedom, because that I don't roll my eyes at that. That is what recovery is all about, is knowing a new freedom. You know, I was in jail for a lot of years with this disease, and coming into recovery was the freedom. It always kind of hurts my heart a little bit when I hear people say, "Oh, I just feel like I'm so." Being in this program is so rigid, and I don't have my freedom, and I just think it's just the opposite. You know, we have so much freedom. I have so much freedom once I've lost my servitude, really, to food and to compulsive eating. I was hopeless, helpless when I came into these rooms, and recovery has allowed me to walk forward, to move forward, and to continue moving forward. It's just I'm just so grateful for it. I'm going to just tell the story of one compulsive eater, and that would be me. But really, you know, it's all of us. I have the specific events of my life, but we are all alike in so many ways. I have never heard anyone speak at a meeting, at a convention, anywhere that I did not identify in some respect, and usually in every respect. And that too is a new freedom. You know, instead of spending my life hiding my compulsive eating because I thought I was horrible, evil, wicked, and crazy, and nobody else had this issue with food, now I know that we all do. And it's just the way we are. And speaking of that, I believe I was born with this disease. I just believe I was born with this disease. And the disease is the disease of skewed perception, self-centeredness, grandiosity, childishness, and being emotionally sensitive. And I think that is the ism. I didn't exhibit the symptoms of my disease, the compulsive eating, until I was in my early 20s. I was born I grew up in a small town in South Dakota with three older brothers, which was mighty sweet, I must tell you, because I was the youngest and the only girl, so life was pretty good. I didn't have any food issues as a kid. But when I look back, I can see that I had the ism, you know. I started feeling apart from, and the Big Book talks about that feeling apart from, and I think that's part of our disease, not feeling like we belong. On the surface, it may look like we belong, but I always felt that I wasn't. You know, I always had this facade up here, and I was like the great and wonderful Wizard of Oz. I was cowering behind this facade, and this facade was how I wanted you to see me and how I wanted to act. But I spent my whole life being anxious, you know, just kind of going, how do you do this? What do you say? What do you do? Watching anybody else to see what to do, because I didn't know, you know, and I'm cowering behind my facade. So I had a really nice childhood, and I believe that I've heard a lot of people who had difficult childhoods in these rooms, and I don't believe that my compulsive eating derives from a difficult childhood, because I didn't have one. So I don't think all of us are in here because we had hard childhoods, but I believe we're all in here because we've had long childhoods. I came in here. I didn't come in here to grow up. Let's face facts. I came in here to lose weight. But who knows? Lo and behold, along the way, I get a little more grown up all the time. And that is knowing a new freedom. Believe me, not being that childish tantrum. Tantrum throwing person that I spent most of my life being. I still have those flashes, no question about it, but I do know a new freedom. My food addiction, the symptoms of my ism really, started when I was about 20. I had chosen to go to a Catholic girls' college, and while there, I did two things, two extremes. One was pray, and the other was drink. And I was equally sincere about both of them. While I was there, I decided I had a vocation to become a nun. So I went through all of the interviews with the Mother of Postulants and Novitiates and Mother Superior, and I was going to go in the convent in September. And that summer, my parents decided to move from South Dakota to California because my three older brothers all lived here at that time. And I said, I'm not going out there. That's Sin City, you know. I'm not going to Los Angeles. I'm going to stay here and pray in my little convent. And I said, and my mother said, oh, you've got to come out with us. So I said, okay, I'll drive out there with you, but I'm coming right back. And, I mean, who wouldn't? Who wouldn't go back to a little convent in South Dakota? I said, I'll drive out there with you, and I did, that was like 48 years ago, I believe, and as I always say, I jumped into Sodom and Gomorrah with both feet and never went back. But the point of that story is that the first time I binged, the first time I gained any weight, I had never had a weight problem, it was emotional binging at that time, and I gained maybe like 10 to 15 pounds, which at that time was horrific for me. And later, you know, that was kid stuff, 10 to 15 pounds. But at the time, that was serious biz. And I got out here, and I remember my oldest brother, the first thing he said to me was, what have you been eating? And but I lost the weight just normally and naturally because, as you know, the Big Book talks about that. At some point, we crossed the line. I had not crossed the line yet. And I lost the weight normally, kept it off for a number of years, and then I gained 20 pounds. And I went to my first commercial weight loss program then. And because I am a compulsive person, I followed that food plan. I lost the weight right away, kept it off a number of years. And then I gained 40 pounds and went back to that weight loss program. Lost it, kept it off a number of years, and then I gained 60 pounds. And I know this progression because of that first question in our first 30 days, you know, of our history. And my progression was 20, 40, 60, 80, 100, literally. 20, 40, 60, 80, 100. And I would keep the weight off for a number of years. That's the interesting thing. And I remember saying lost the weight, when I gain 5 pounds, not if, but when I gain 5 pounds, I will lose it immediately because I don't want to go back up again, and it's easy to lose 5 pounds. Well, that never happened because I never knew what the trigger was that would cause me to start eating. Next thing I knew, I'd be up 60 pounds or 80 pounds or 100 pounds. And when I was up and miserable and wanted to kill myself, I never knew what the trigger was that would allow me to go on another diet. I never knew. And so when I came into these rooms, I knew I was powerless over food. I had taken the first step without even knowing what the first step was. I knew I was powerless. I had proven it to myself again and again and again and again. And so I went to a therapist who specialized in addictions. And because what I thought we would do is we would talk about me, which was really be fascinating, and then we would we would find some little incident in my childhood that caused me to have this problem with food, and we would talk about it, and then it would all be fixed, it would all be solved. And this darn therapist, what a quack! She told me she did have the solution. She told me about this program where you go to 3 meetings a week, you make 4 phone calls a day, you weigh and measure your food, and I'm going, that's a crock. I'm not going to do that. And it's got to be an easier, softer way. And it took me a year to get here. But when I came in, I was so miserable and so desperate, so suicidal. And I believe we all come in here at different times in our journey, at different points in our paths. And I have not slipped since I've been in these rooms, but I slipped a lot before I came in with all my diets gaining and losing. And when I came in, I was ready. You know, I had no questions. I came in, I was miserable, and I'm so grateful. My neighbor, whom I barely knew, I did know was in this program, took me to my first meeting. After the meeting, she grabbed me by the arm, hauled me over to somebody, and asked that person if they would be my sponsor. And I am so grateful for that. I always think it's good to remember sort of our Eskimos and who brought us in and how we got here. And I'm so grateful that she did that because I would have been out of that room so fast. Not because I thought everybody was crazy. I didn't think that at all. I knew I was. But because I would never, ever, ever have had the arrogance in my view at that point in time to ask somebody to be my sponsor, to spend time with me. I never would have been able to do that. So fortunately, my neighbor did this for me. And my sponsor explained the food plan, got the big book, the 12 and 12. It was a Sunday morning. That Sunday morning meeting is still my home meeting after over 19 years. And she said, you know, go buy what you need to buy, plan your menu for tomorrow, I'll call me in the morning. So I spent the rest of that Sunday eating my brains out. And and my only regret was that there weren't more hours in the day. So so obviously I had that diet mentality. That was the diet mentality, you know, which is fine. I don't care. I don't care what brought me in, what I thought when I came in. That doesn't matter. What happened after I got here. And because I was so desperate and so miserable and so beaten down, I, who argue everything with anybody, even if I believe something, I'll argue the opposite side, I didn't question anything. I thought it was the stupidest food plan in the world because I knew better, but I didn't question it. I just did what I was told because I was so desperate and so miserable. And that was my gift, that desperation and that misery. And so I just did what I was told. And one thing that was different about this was that previously when I'd done my weight loss deals, you know, I would lose the weight. I would, you know, eat whatever I was supposed to be eating on whatever the diet was, but I would spend all the time in between paging through my shelves of cookbooks and paging through my cooking magazines and looking at the pictures and just focusing on the food. And the different thing about this is I didn't have time to do that because I was writing those darn questions and going to those darn meetings and making those darn calls. And what a gift, you know. This is not a diet. This is not a diet. And I believe that often this program is viewed as I'm abstinent and I go to meetings. I'm really working this program. And I view that as a diet and a support group. abstinence and going to meetings as a diet and a support group. And diets and support groups never worked for me before I came into here, so they won't work for me here. What I had to do here was work the steps and change myself. And surely that's 10 minutes. Work the steps and change myself, because that's what recovery is all about. It's all about change, change. And you know us, we're not like big people who like change. But it is about change, and that is my dilemma. I want things to change, but I don't want to have to do anything different. But again, that is the magic of this program and the magic of the steps, is that it's so gradual. If I just do what I'm told every day, if I just write that question and then the next one, if I go to the meeting and listen, gradually I will change. And one of the big changes in my life in these rooms was when I came into these rooms, I thought I was like the most honest person walking the face of the earth, you know. Diogenes said, put down his lamp. I was the honest one. And then I realized that, oh, my God, I'm the biggest liar in all of history. Well, I mean, you see the grandiosity here, the biggest liar. Anyway, I was a big liar. So I really did believe I was honest when I came into these rooms. And then I realized I'm not in the least bit honest. I mean, I was really honest about you. I could tell you anything. But in fact, when I realized that I was not honest and I wanted to work on my honesty as a specific issue, I was sharing that at a meeting, and after the meeting, one of my friends said, I don't think we could stand it if you were any more honest. But I wanted to be honest about me. And just as happiness and health and humility are byproducts of working the steps, So too, a byproduct of my learning to be honest was getting rid of my people pleasing, because in my view, people pleasing is just dishonesty. You know, saying what you don't want to say because you want to please somebody, or being who you don't want to be because you want to please somebody. It's just dishonesty. So, in my working on becoming an honest person, the byproduct was I lost my people-pleasing, which made my life much, and the lives of those around me, much, much, much more pleasant. And, of course, this is the thing, you know, with every change that I attempt in my recovery, in changing, I've had this characteristic, it's like a pendulum, I've had this characteristic my entire life over here. And then I make the attempt to change, and because I don't really know how and I have no practice, the pendulum swings over here. Now, I said the most horrible, abrupt, awful things when I was learning to be honest, and in people-pleasing situations, too. You know, somebody would say something, and I think, okay, I've got to be honest about this. And I didn't know how, so I would just blurt out some honest thing. But I had to do that. I had to do that. It wasn't comfortable, but I had to do it. And then gradually the pendulum, you know, swung less to extremes, less to extremes, less to extremes. And the ideal is that it finally reaches the middle. But this can take a lifetime. But it's not going to happen if I don't start it. So I'm grateful for that. I was talking to somebody here this weekend and about working this program, and she said, you mean you still write down your food and call it in every day after all these years? And I said, I do, every single day. When I started the program, I would write my food the night before in my writing, and I still do that every single day. And my sponsor believes that our disease doesn't take off on weekends and doesn't have holidays, and so I call 7 days a week. And the one thing I know is that I don't know. I've never once believed, and I pray that I continue in this belief, I've never once believed that if I walk away, or that I know how to do this, and if I walk away, I will be fine. I do not believe that for a moment. You know, it's like, this thing really works. Writing my food down, calling in, committing it, going to meetings, making calls, sponsoring these. It's really worked. I think I'll stop doing it. And that's what we do, you know? And it's like that's the disease, you know, we have a disease of insanity. And so I would say I work the program harder now than I did when I first started. In fact, when I first started, the 3 meetings a week, you know, I didn't fight anything, as I said. I was willing to do anything. Didn't believe it, but I was willing to do it. And I said, when I first started, I said, 3 meetings a week, okay, I'll go to 3 meetings a week during the week, but the weekends are mine. You know, I'm not fooling around with meetings on weekends. And I now go to 3 meetings on the weekend, and I have for probably 18 years, and I go to 4 meetings a week. And I wouldn't give up any of them. I love each of them, and I get something special from each of them. So I think this sharing that we have is one of our greatest gifts. One of the things I hear at meetings is I'm always hearing people saying sugar and flour, sugar, and often sugar and white flour. I don't know what white flour has to do with it, but people are always talking about sugar and flour, sugar and flour. And you know what? It's sugar, flour, and quantity. We are a program of sugar, flour, and quantity. That phrase should just roll off our tongues. Not sugar and flour, but sugar, flour, and quantity. If it were just sugar and flour, we wouldn't eat our food plan. We just say, don't eat sugar and flour. But our whole program is based on our food plan, so that's quantity, folks. I feel very strongly about that because I'm a quantity person. I was never a sugar person, and people say, how did you get to weigh over 100 pounds more if you didn't like sugar? Easy, kids, easy. Plus, I was getting a lot of sugar in liquid form at that point. But sugar was not a big deal for me, but boy, quantity was. So even to this day, I will look at my weighed and measured food, especially my breakfast, and I'll be going, is that all there is? Even to this day. And I have never once been hungry when I have finished my meal, never once, even in the first 30 days. And that's like going from 35,000 calories a meal to our food plan. I have never been hungry. But still, I look at that plate and go, that's not enough for me. One of the things I love about weighing and measuring is so liberating. It is, to me, it doesn't curtail my freedom, knowing a new freedom. It gives me such freedom weighing and measuring because I am a quantity person. I have to eat till it's gone, And now because it's weighed and measured, I can eat till it's gone. I can tell you all about how I lick my plate when nobody's looking. And we do some fellowship after one of my early morning meetings and bring our breakfast. I was talking with a friend in fellowship, and we're talking about how we kind of do this at home. And at the restaurant, we don't do that, but I think about that all the time. And one time, I used to have my portable breakfast, and I would have my portable breakfast when I went to my early morning Saturday meeting, and I put the protein on. I can't say food. This isn't a meeting. The protein on rice cakes, and I balanced it on my newspaper while I was going out to my car, and I was walking out the front door, and they slid, and it stuck to the side of the house, and. And I didn't want to be late for my meeting, so I just scraped it off and put it back on and ate it, you know. Because it was my food, kids. It was weighed and measured. I was going to have it. So there were a couple of things that I wanted to say. I wanted to talk about how important the traditions are to my recovery, and because my recovery depends upon the group, and the group depends upon the traditions. And so the traditions are very important to my recovery, and I shared this earlier this weekend that I hear in meetings, I go to 3 12 and 12 studies a week. I've gone to 2 12 and 12 studies for over 18 years, and I've added a third one. And so I've read the traditions lots of times. And our traditions questions, you know, our traditions study guide, if you folk haven't done them, get on them. Because after all these years of doing reading the traditions, I did those questions, and it was like whole new worlds opened up. But I had a point. Oh, my point in talking about the traditions was how important they are for unity of our fellowship. In 2006, the conference, and we had a wonderful conference this year. The delegates came in from all across the country, did service, gave up their jobs, their daily lives to come in and do service for us all. And in 2006, the delegates voted that we would not read non-CIHOW or non-AA conference-approved literature in our meetings. And one of the 12 and 12 meetings I went to used a 12 and 12 from another fellowship. And we loved that book. And we had to, after the delegates voted, because the delegates are the group conscience of CIHOW as a whole, after the delegates voted, we had to vote in our meeting whether we wanted to deregister from CIHOW and continue reading our beloved 12 and 12, or whether we would switch to the AA 12 and 12, which is conference approved. And because unity and the group is so important, we all voted that we would switch the book. And, you know, we certainly get as much, we say in our tools that we identify absolutely when we use the word compulsive eater in place of alcoholic, and food in place of alcohol. And I do identify absolutely in my ism, but of course the substance is different. And as we heard a little earlier, one of the big differences is in some fellowships we put our substance down and learn to live without it, but in how we have to learn to live with our substance. And that's on a daily basis. And for me, that's why the structure of how is so critical. I need that daily reminder throughout the day, because I'm dealing with my substance throughout the day. So the structure works so well for me. It gives me so much freedom. Deb said earlier about packing our food. I think you're talking about packing our food, and it just flashed through my mind. I pack my breakfast and my lunch to take to work. Seems like I'm packing food all the time. And recently, my dog had an illness, and he now is a vegetarian. So and so now I'm cooking his meals and packing his meals and getting them ready for him to eat. And I swear to heaven, it seems like I'm packing food all the time. But on the other hand, what better substance could I be dealing with, I gotta say. coming into these rooms, you know, as I said earlier, we all get here however we get here. But I think probably one thing that most of us had in common was maybe we were hopeless and we had no place else to go. It's when my therapist told me about this program, what we have to do, it was like, what the heck? You know, so it's not like I woke up one day and said, wow, life is fabulous. I think I'll go to CIHOW. And, you know, it didn't work that way. I had to be really miserable to come here. And in carrying our message, which is another critical part of our program, carrying our message, spreading the message to other compulsive eaters who suffer, thank heavens I heard about this program. We need to get our name out there, you know, so other people will know about Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, the HOW concept. That's what we are, Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, the HOW concept. And I forget where I was going with that. It's important to carry the message. It is important to get our name out there. And the 12-step way of life is nothing but knowing about freedom. And every time I start dealing with a new character defect, you know, like the honesty deal, every time I start, it's always the same character defects, just in different permutations. So I don't get excited if I go, oh, I thought I dealt with that. Where did that come from? That's part of me. It's a characteristic. It's just a negative aspect of my characteristics, and they'll always be with me. I may be able to deal with a certain negative aspects of that, but that same characteristic is going to come back again and again. And so when I'm working through I'm forced to work through a new aspect of some negative characteristic, what I have learned in these years now it's pretty exciting when that happens, because even though I don't want to do it, and I'll put it off forever, and one of the things, and I hope somebody closes their ears about this one, but one of the things that I notice I do is I won't, if something is that I know I have to face and have to deal with, I won't bring it up to my sponsor for a while, because I'm thinking, dang, I don't want to start dealing with this. And but what happens, you know, when I'm now, when I'm ready to do that, because of my experience in these rooms, knowing that every time I work through something, I come out the other end feeling so much freer. There's so much more freedom every single time I work through something. So now I no longer have that great dread. I still do, because I'm a procrastinator and I, you know, really don't want to do anything hard. But but I know that more freedom is going to come out of this. And I'm so grateful for that. The other thing I'd like to talk about is, again, following this program the way it's written. The big book says we have no effective mental defense against that first compulsive bite. And I think that first compulsive bite is so critical, so critical. Because we don't step over the line until we smudge it, you know, and we can get a little sloppy and pretty soon we're slipping down the slope. So that first compulsive bite is so critical. And I know I have no effective mental defense against this. Early on in recovery, I was preparing dinner for my husband and me, and we had grilled steaks. And for some reason, I have no idea why, I just decided I wouldn't weigh my steak, because I thought, well, if I cut out this center portion and then get rid of the bone, and then that'll be about 4 ounces. So I just slap it on my plate, and it's falling off the edges, and I'm convinced it's 4 ounces. And I sat down, and I thought, oh, maybe I'll just cut out the center portion and weigh that, and then, you know, then I know the meat around the bone will be just maybe another little bit, because I was eating 5 ounces at that time. So I got up and weighed it, and of course it was 7 ounces, you know. And I had convinced myself it would be 4 ounces. There's no reason I did this. No reason I did this. But that was such a good lesson for me, and I've remembered it, you know, all these years, because it shows me that I do have no effective mental defense against that first bite. And, you know, people will say, and I'm sure they say to all of us, you know, well, don't you know what 4 ounces looks like? Don't you know what a cup looks like? And I always say, yeah, I do on a good day, but I never know if it's going to be a good day. And I just know me. You know, if I looked at it once and thought, oh, that's about 4 ounces, and then it was a little bit more, then the next day I would think that a little bit more was 4 ounces. You know, and pretty soon I'd... So I just don't do that. Anyway, I'm so delighted to be here today, and so delighted to be in recovery, and so delighted to know a new freedom. And I think that all of us in these rooms, everybody in this chair, we're the luckiest people on earth to be sitting in these chairs this morning. We really are. So, thank you.